Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Melody Cederstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. My co-host today is Dave Allen, as we bring you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events. It is Wednesday, October 24th, 2018. Yes, it is Wednesday. Good afternoon, Dave.
Happy hump day, Melody.
All righty then. We're going to do the market report, and then we have Wendy Wilson joining us from Apothecary Herbs. So, and the markets today, the Dow was down over 600 points right before the show. We'll see if they were able to bring it back a little bit. NASDAQ was down almost 4.5%. But first, let's get to the gold pricing today. So right now we have gold. Let's make sure I have an update in the New York aftermarket spot price. 220, up 220 at 1233. Silver today down 0.06 at 1475. Platinum was down 2 at 834. And the big rise we saw in palladium of late did fall back $16 at 1122. So the white metals pressure on that. It's a temporary play on silver, the industrial metals, and the pressure on that with the negative stock markets today. So that's okay. The fundamentals there for gold and silver, it hasn't changed. And what we've seen in the paper markets today only makes those fundamentals even stronger. And, you can't look for knee-jerk reactions, because I believe knee-jerk reactions are temporary. What we want to see in gold is what we're seeing right now. Move up, even with the U.S. dollar being stronger today, 0.46 at 96.39. So a good day for gold, even though it's only $2. Can't look at, how much. It's up with a big, strong tick up with the dollar. Crude oil was down 0.08 at 66.35. In the paper markets today, some of it still ticked through the numbers of 24,583 on the Dow, down 608 points. You don't have a 500 point yesterday to the downside and reverse itself and not have that come back sometime shortly thereafter, and that's what we saw today. The NASDAQ was down 329 points at 7,108, down 4.43%. The S&P down 84, down 3%, 2,656. You can see money going into the 10-year yield, the treasuries, the 10-year treasuries. You have the yield at 3.12%, down 0.04. Asian and European markets were basically unchanged overnight. A little movement there. A lot of fears beginning to, again, creep into the market. Bitcoin was up just fractionally. It's been hanging out at that 6,400 level for now for weeks. I believe. So, interesting day in the markets. We're going to talk about the gold and silver markets and then the paper markets in the second and third segment today. But first, we have Wendy Wilson joining us from Apothecary Herbs. Good afternoon, Wendy.
Good afternoon, Melody, and hello, Dave.
Hi, Wendy.
I thought we'd talk about this new global push for medical mandates and fines with regard to vaccines, because there's this global crackdown on people who are refusing to submit to vaccine treatments, and the countries of Italy and Australia have started legal action on anyone who's not in compliance with what medicine says is required for vaccines. So the position is that, vaccine non-compliance is essentially child abuse, and they're writing laws and passing them to financially punish parents who refuse them. Now, the political position is the world is expected to understand and know and accept the reports from medical science that the vaccines have wiped out infections, and we need to use vaccines. And of course, we also know medicine is in total and absolute shock and denial when medicine sees a disease outbreak amongst the vaccinated. Therefore, medicine tends to declare that it must be a rare disease or it's the fault of the non-vaccinated. So this is an aggressive little push that's really threatening protective rights of an individual over their own body. So I thought we'd cover that. And being non-compliant over in Europe and Australia is expensive. There's this. There's several countries carrying out these strategies to make people comply, and what they're doing is the drug companies manufacture the vaccines. You have to get them, so they're implementing this pressure written into their laws, and they also have verbiage in their laws that people can turn you into authorities, like your school personnel, employers, physicians, and whoever has knowledge of your objections to being vaccinated. So here is the equivalent of the U.S. dollar fines in other countries. In Italy, you have a $600 fine. In Germany, it's $3,000. Poland doesn't have fines right now with vaccine mandates, but physicians are punished if they inform patients of the side effects. France has new laws with fines. They're in discussion. And Romania has new laws recently enacted for parents to prove compliance or they forfeit childhood education. Australia has new laws passed in 2017 that prohibits education and daycare of the non-vaccinated. Plus, there's a fine of $4,400 to the parents, and they also withhold any subsidies from the government to that family. Any questions?
Nope.
All right.
Go right in.
We're on a roll. Back, according to Vaccine Today, Europe did a study back in 2010, and they discovered that out of 27 countries, that 15, including Iceland and Norway, had no mandatory vaccine laws whatsoever. So upon that report, the powers set into play to make vaccines kind of the world over this compliance mandate. Now, some are speculating that the issue is not so much about healthcare, but it's more of a political issue enforcing more power and also garnishing money. Now, in Europe, the impact for mandatory vaccines was assessed, and they found there's no clear association with success when the mandates are implemented. This is from the EU-funded asset report. They say the enforcement of the mandatory vaccinations doesn't appear to be relevant in determining childhood immunization rates and the analyzed countries. So the countries where there's vaccination is mandatory did not usually reach any better coverage than similar countries which had no legal obligations, end of quote. So I guess parents are just, at this point, paying the fine. But there is a magic number. The World Health Organization and the CDC have a magic number of vaccine saturation and compliance satisfaction, and that's around 95%. So the same goal has been set for Europe and Australia, and this is definitely this crackdown, and it's on those who really don't trust the reports on vaccines of being effective and being safe. And we have to ask, you know, how would Americans tolerate an enforcement compliance like this that they're facing in other countries? Imagine the pressure anyone would face with a socialized healthcare control plan. Control over all facets of your care can remove an individual's will when they perceive a treatment to be harmful. And most people say, hey, well, that's never going to happen in the United States. Well,
it already is.
Well, yeah, didn't the United States government just make you buy health insurance?
Not only that, but I mean, if your child doesn't get, you know, if you don't vaccinate your child, there are some schools they're not allowed to attend.
Right. Well, what do you suppose it would take for U.S. lawmakers to follow Europe's lead and crack down on its citizens and enforce fines? What do you suppose it would take?
Well, we are fined if we didn't take health care, right?
Well, that's true, but
not anymore.
In the beginning it was.
Well, here's a clue. It's going to take an outbreak, either natural or fabricated, because they're moving vaccines from the individual's decision to social, to we're all in this together thing. Here's a quote from Peter Houts. He's a scientist with Baylor College Infectious Disease Division. He says, I think we're not there in the United States compared to Europe unless there's an outbreak of serious epidemic requiring a public health emergency. So you want to keep in mind the swine flu of 1976 was a fabricated epidemic, or they said it was a healthcare emergency. The vaccine makers and the media and the politicians were all in on it until one brave physician, Dr. Anthony Norris, who was working for the FDA, stood up and blew the lid off of it. Of course, he got fired. But he did protect hundreds, if not thousands, of people from being paralyzed from the swine flu vaccine, because that's what it did to people. Mm. Now, currently in the United States, we have, you know, different vaccine laws in different states. There's this push to streamline that, to have a nationwide global compliance situation. So the laws will move vaccines away from the individual jurisdiction to the public health society jurisdiction. So there's this push for everything to be kind of congruent. And the various exemptions in the 50 states are going to be gone. So some states have already stepped in that direction, like Mississippi, California, and West Virginia. They have just one exemption left, and that's the medical exemption. And so you're being conditioned and moved into this mindset that you're not just responsible for yourself, but you're responsible for all of society. So we're being told, you know, get ready to kiss those lax regulatory environments goodbye. I want to read you a quote from Jennifer Reich. She's a socialist with the University of Colorado. Let me read this. She said, states expect that in order to access public resources like schools, campgrounds, day camps, childcare, individuals must give up some autonomy to make sure everyone in the community is safe. End of quote. You see the mindset there?
Sure do.
Yeah. This is also from Peter Hout, her scientist at Baylor. He said, it looks like California, by simply closing the non-medical exemptions, is having a desired effect in terms of boosting vaccine coverage to 98%. Based on that, I think this needs to be the focus, closing the non-medical exemptions in the 18 states that still allow them. And this is also from Gary Finnegan. He's an editor of the Vaccines Today publication. He says, in most instances where vaccine mandates are enforced in the U.S., they apply to childhood immunization. However, vaccination is in a condition also for employment in some occupations, such as healthcare. This is not a legal mandate per se, but it is a form of discrimination that is accepted in such jurisdictions for the overall good. In principle, mandates for vaccines can be for people of all ages. Now, that's a scary statement.
Wow.
Think about it. Yep. Now, this is what a professor in Italy, this is Professor Lopacco. He's the University of Italy, Pisa, Italy. He says, mandates really do not improve vaccine confidence. Actually, they make opposition to vaccines even stronger, he says. However, they are a powerful tool to break complacency and therefore makes vaccinations look more convenient and efficient. So, he also goes on to say the real power behind vaccine mandates is not in coercing reluctant parents or adults to vaccinate against their will. It is sending a signal to the wider population that vaccination is a vital part of public health. So it's if you don't get vaccinated, you run the risk of, you know, spreading disease. Well, if everybody else is vaccinated, what are they worried about?
Well, a lot of the diseases that they vaccinate you against aren't contagious, or are they?
Well, right now, under the vaccine injury court, any vaccine that is not under their subsidy tax is you have no protection of bringing it forward in a legal action at all, and that would be flu vaccines and shingles vaccine so far.
Well, is shingles contagious?
Yes, it is. Actually, your shingles vaccine is 10 times, it's the chickenpox vaccine, just 10 times stronger. And all virologists know when you're exposed to that zoster virus, you will have either chickenpox or shingles. There's just no way around it.
Is shingles, when a person breaks out in shingles, are they contagious?
Yeah. Anytime you get a viral injection, an artificial infection through a vaccine, virologists know, any of the honest ones, they say you're contagious and shed the virus for 14 days.
Well, you're talking about the shot.
Right. And yeah, if somebody gets chickenpox, they are contagious. And if someone gets shingles, they say you're not contagious, but it's the same virus. It just sits on your ganglia nerve sheath and waits for you to get stressed out, and it comes back at you.
Well, I'll tell you, I'm surprised I haven't had shingles with the stress that we got.
Let me read you this quote from the vaccine injury team at Rawls Law Group. They say, if vaccines were safe and effective, we would see far fewer outbreaks of disease vaccines they are supposed to prevent, and we would not have awarded over $3.6 billion in compensation awards.
Wow. That's a lot.
Well, here's something that's really interesting. You know, you may be astonished to find out that there's a list of vaccine opponents, and some of them are really from professional organizations in the United States. So this means there's millions of Americans standing up and just saying no to certain vaccines. We're talking about labor unions, trade groups that are representing skilled workers and professionals. For instance, the American Medical Association opposes the flu mandatory vaccine with 228,000 members. The Service Employees International Union represents over 1 million healthcare workers, and they oppose it. The Association of the American Physicians and Surgeons also oppose it, as well as American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees with over 1.3 million members. The American Federation of Teachers with over 1.6 million members, the Association of Flight Attendants, as well as the Coalition for Kaiser Permanente Union. Now that's medical. They oppose it. And the United Steel, Paper, and Forestry, Rubber Manufacturing, Energy, Allied Industrial and Service Workers International Union also oppose it. So we've got some institutions here that are saying no to the coercion and threat of losing employment if they don't get vaccinated. Here's a quote from the Association of Physicians and Surgeons. They say this: we strenuously object to any coercion of healthcare personnel to receive influenza immunizations. It's a fundamental human right not to be subjected to medical interventions without fully informed consent. Now, that's a bombshell right there, because what that says is the public's not fully informed.
With very little medication, are they ever fully informed?
Well, you know, you and I put out this newsletter, American Survival, so in the next issue, they're going to get this hot link from a medical physician who is testifying, 27 years as an MD, testifies before a legislature saying science does not support what we've all been told about vaccines by the drug companies. He says they cause internal medicine disorders and illness. And it's a hot link. He tells legislators to do their homework.
I hear that music, Wendy. We're out of time.
Okay.
It went by. Give us your number real quick.
866-229-3663. I got more. We'll talk about it later on the next show. How's that?
Okay, appreciate it, Wendy. Thank you very much. You're listening to Financial
Bye Bye.
That was Wendy Wilson from Apothecary Herbs. Give her a call at 866-229-3663. And we'll be right back.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it. Nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSE Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSETalkRadio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading 1-800-375-4188 or online at DGScoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading. 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Visit the website dgscoins.com. I was trying to say that in all one breath. And make sure you sign up for a weekly newsletter. And again, Wendy also has her articles in there and great information to help keep you healthy. It's always better to be to try and stay healthy than trying to correct something that occurs to us. So today, Dave, we're going to talk about the sell-off in the U.S. stocks. It wiped out gains for the year in both the S&P 500 index and the Dow Jones Industrial. We have as mixed corporate earnings and weak housing data fuel the anxiety, and rising prices is going to crimp the economic growth. We saw, as I mentioned earlier, Treasuries rallied for a second day on demand for safe haven assets. Now everybody says, well, why aren't they going to gold? Well, they're always going to Treasuries first because it's very easy to transfer money. You know, it's a few clicks, you know, on your computer, and they can move, you know, billions of dollars or millions of dollars in, you know, the blink of an eye. So usually you'll see that, and as long as you see that money going in there, then your gold will be picking up shortly thereafter. The S&P extended its October route to 8.8%, and this is making it the worst month since February 2009. There was disappointing earnings from AT&T, Texas Instruments. You know, they're going to kind of blame them as far as driving the declines in the communications and semiconductor groups. Boeing had a good day. I don't have the numbers from Boeing, but they I guess, had a good day. The NASDAQ lapsed into a correction from its record closing high in August. Let's see if there's anything else. Tomorrow we're going to get earning reports from Alphabet, Intel, and Amazon. And let's see if there's any other interesting things there before we move on to the new home sales. And of course, you know, I'm not sure if anything, the market, the fear, anything was driven by the packages that had bombs inside them to the presidential, actually it was, what, six boxes, I think, that was received. And, you know, I think Eric Holder and Wasserman Schultz and, you know, a whole bunch of folks received packages and so forth. So I'm not sure if that had any impact. I don't think it did, because I just don't see that having, you know, any market impact, you know, whatsoever. So, but it was mentioned, and I guess they'll use it if they can, as far as an impact on the market. So, some of the more key events that might be continuing to affect, we have the U.S. gross domestic product growth. I think that's forecast is coming Friday. The ECB policymakers on Thursday is going to confirm that asset purchases are going to end this year. Yeah, right. Monetary policy decisions are coming from Sweden and Canada this week still. and the earnings season continues to roll on. So that's pretty much it. Gathering any more information, but some of that impact on the markets was due to the new home sales, Dave. It plunged to in September, falling 5.5% to an almost two-year amid pressures for rising interest rates that have hammered the real estate market. This was the Commerce Department that reported the sales for the month came in at 553,000. And again, as I mentioned, that's 5.5% below the downward revised August rate of 585. So, kind of a big hit on the market, wouldn't you say, Dave?
Oh, yeah, substantially. I mean, it certainly had, I think, an impact early on the paper markets tumbling, particularly anything related to housing, housing stocks in particular. But builders are down 40% year to date. You know, and the latest data reflect a tough time for the housing market. Investment advisor Peter Buchvar, who we quote on occasion, said it's clear this important area of the U.S. economy, which is highly sensitive to price and rates, has obviously slowed sharply. Plus, the Fed has hiked its benchmark interest rates a couple of times this year to a target of between 2 and 2.25. Mortgage rates have risen in kind. June and July sales rates were also revised lower. New home sales have now declined for 4 straight months. You know, from a geographic standpoint, I mean, the South, it's the biggest area for home sales, new home sales. Saw some impact from Hurricane Florence, although that hasn't been quantified to date. And, the region saw a decline of about 1.5% year-on-year. The Northeast, which usually has the lowest number of sales because we're more fully developed, saw its numbers collapse almost 41% to the lowest level since April of 2015.
Good grief, 40%. Well, the Midwest saw some gains. They saw about a 7% gain. Of course, the West declined. And the median sales price from $331,000 a year ago dropped to $320,000. So there might be some hope that this market is moderating, maybe enough to provide some sort of a bottom. But the big question is, with the drop in sales, is whether the 3% growth trajectory of the economy is sustainable. And we've had fiscal stimulus that provided a strong boost, the tax cuts and to corporate profits, and business consumer confidence was running near record highs. But this slumping housing market due to these rising rates sort of represents a significant headwind going forward. And so, and what, 2.5%, and the market is falling apart?
Mm-hmm.
We also had mortgage applications. The Columbus Day holiday appeared to have messed around a little bit with the mortgage numbers, but a week later, the numbers are now clear, and so is this message. Higher interest rates, again, are hitting homeowners. Taking out last week's Columbus Day holiday, mortgage volume is lower than it was 2 weeks ago for refinances and purchases. Volume was also 16% lower than the same week 1 year ago. Mortgage applications to refinance jumped 10% for the week, but were 32% lower than a year ago when the mortgage interest rates were a full percentage point lower. And so that's a call out, again, as I say time and time again, that's a call out to all of those folks out there who didn't think a quarter point interest rate would impact the economy. And it seems small, it seems minuscule, and if you have a strong economy and people are making a great wage and people are, it shouldn't make a difference.
Well,
but that is not the case, Dave.
Yeah, the emphasis there is on if people's wages were rising substantially. I mean, they're rising, but so is inflation, meaning their purchasing power on a net basis is the same or actually slightly falling. Now,
well, that's if you use that, and that's if you use government numbers.
Well, that's right.
But we all know all the things that we need and everything. People, you know, are truly losing.
Oh no, that's fine. I mean, the average contract interest rate for 30-year fixed-rate mortgages with conforming loan balances of $453,000 or less increased last week to its highest level since February of 2011, 5.11%. Mortgage apps to purchase a home rose 2% for the week, but were flat compared to a year ago. Demand is strong, but as we've noted several times over the past several months, affordability has weakened considerably. So, you know, here's an interesting fact from Zillow in this regard. The monthly payment on the average home is now 15% higher than it was a year ago. So you can see that hitting people, you know, smack dab in the wallet. Melody.
Absolutely. And yesterday we talked a little bit about Caterpillar too, and it doesn't hurt to again just mention them because their shares fell again 10% as mining and construction equipment that they make it's warning about the rising costs due to higher steel and prices and U.S. tariffs. And we got some information, other articles that we're going to talk about today that continue to talk about these rising costs and how those costs have yet to trickle down. You know, these companies are absorbing because they know the consumer out there is broke and businesses out there, they're going to go with the cheapest, so they can't lower their prices yet. You know, or they can't raise their prices yet, so they're trying to keep it as low as they can, so just to keep the customers. But it's hard to believe, Dave, that Caterpillar has lost 21% of its market value this month as these costs continue to rise.
Well, yep, and, you know, I'm not sure that it's going to, that fall is going to, you know, end anytime soon. We'll see when the fourth quarter reports come out in a couple of months. But, you know, the IMF, as we know, warned earlier this month that, you know, choppy waters are in the offing in the global economy. You know, and analysts say some end-user industries like Caterpillar may be reaching peaks in their growth cycles. And that's certainly a negative for Caterpillar, but also for, you know, industrial companies in general that are having a hard time living up to you know, higher expectations of the market. Now, let's see, what else? Well, you know, interestingly, Caterpillar has notified dealers it will increase prices by 1-4% across the globe, but only starting in January. And of course, depending on what happens between now and then. And this, I expect that we're going to hear more and more of this, Melody, as the rest of the year rolls on. Particularly if you know, these trade spats continue unresolved.
Yeah, I guess the big increase in these tariffs is January. Isn't that the next deadline? I think is January.
Yeah,
until China gets whacked with some.
Yeah, you're right. You know, there's one other notable thing here, you know, with respect to Caterpillar that we've also talked a lot about in general. Their CFO said in a conference call that the company has more cash than it needs right now, so it's focusing on its share buyback program.
You know? Well, of course.
Repurchases in the final quarter this year expected to be $750 million plus. You know, the guy, Andrew Bonfield, said that there'll be more, you know, if the stock turns out to be more undervalued. Astounding.
It really is. And how many people is that going to lure back into the stock, stabilize the stock from going to its real market value? And, you know, I heard them talking on CNBC today where they're saying it's not these institutional buyers, it's not the hedge funds buyers that are in the market right now, it's individuals in the market. And it's just... You would think that people would learn, and they would learn to see the signs that, you know, they're coming in and they're being fed by all their financial, buy on the dips, buy on the dips. So they're in there scrambling, buying on the dips, and, you know, all the big guys are moving out, and the only one other ones that are buying stocks are the corporations buying back their shares. So,
yeah,
I mean,
there you go. It's hard for us to get out of the box for some reason. You know, we still, as much as we should have learned by now, we still want to see the world as we'd like it to be, not as it is. And that has consequences. Consequences in, you know, in many respects. But we're talking here about, you know, financially. So look out for yourselves, folks. Protect yourselves with the gold and silver.
Well, I mean, there's stages in everything. And when you look at stages of a correction in the markets, and I'll just use correction, or and stages of bull markets and stages in bear markets, it's always the individual. When you're in a bear market, it's always the individual that gets in there last, you know, before it collapses. I mean, you can take it to any currency collapses to everything else. There's stages. You know, you're in stage one, stage two, stage threes. The last stage three, is the individuals are coming in and they're doing all the buying and so forth, and that's right before it collapses. So,
yeah.
You know, wasn't it, I think it was Rockefeller during the, everybody knows this saying, we've said it on this program, I've heard it other places, where Rockefeller was getting his shoes shined, and the shoeshine boy gave him a stock tip. And he went and immediately canceled out of his shares. Because he says, when the shoeshine boy is giving me stock tips, it's time to get out.
There you go.
That holds true today. You know, this morning, the Dallas Fed President Robert Kaplan became the latest central banker to say it's time to let the economy run on its own. He says that the Fed is undergoing this criticism from the administration and some other notable market voices. And he says policymakers are on the right track with their gradual approach to raising interest rates. He says the unemployment rate is running at 3.7%, but we know it's higher. Inflation is just above the Fed's 2% target. We know that's higher. But these are the numbers that they go by, believing that the Fed has met its dual mandate. The FOMC has hiked its benchmark rate three times this year, and supposedly the fourth time in December. I don't think they'll do it in December, but go ahead, Dave.
Well, you know, once again, we're gonna see. I mean, still over 80% of the market, those who trade in this believe that the Fed will raise again in December. We talk a little bit more about that later on in the show, but you know, we'll talk about that in the next segment, I guess, Melody.
Yes, we'll be returning. You're listening to Financial Survival. I'm Melody Cedarstrom, and I'm here with Dave Allen.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com, or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
We all know that Berkey Water Purification Systems are the most trusted name in water filtration. As an authorized Berkey dealer for over 6 years and serving thousands of satisfied customers, the Berkey Guy offers amazing specials for Berkey Water Filtration Systems. The Berkey Light Systems include a set of self-sterilizing and recleanable black purification elements that purify water by removing chlorine, pathogenic bacteria, cysts, and parasites to non-detectable levels and remove harmful chemicals such as herbicides and pesticides. Order the Berkey Light System today, complete with two black Berkey elements for only $231, and the Berkey Guy will ship your order free of charge. With the purchase of a Berkey Light, the Berkey Guy is also offering a set of fluoride and arsenic filters for only $39.99. That's over 30% off the retail price. Call the Berkey Guy at 1-877-886-3653. That's 1-877-886-3653. Or order online at GoBerkey.com. That's GoBerkey.com today.
And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188. You know, we were talking about earlier the stocks were falling. Well, not only are just your, you know, tech stocks and housing stocks and so forth, but also bank stocks. They're basically leading the way. And, you know, if this kind of reminds you of 2008, it kind of should, because that is precisely when we witnessed back then. Yeah, banking stocks collapsed as fears have gripped the marketplace. And ultimately, many large global banks had to be bailed out either directly or indirectly by their national governments as they failed one after another. And that's what happened back in 2008. The health of the banking system is absolutely paramount, because the flow of money is our, you know, debt is our economic lifeblood. So when the money flow of money tightens, the consequences are very dramatic. And that is what we witnessed in 2008. So we're kind of keeping a close eye on banking stocks. Global systemically important bank stocks surged in the aftermath of Trump's election or victory in 2016, but they are absolutely plunging now. In fact, they are down about a whopping 27% from the peak, and of course that'll put them solidly in bear market territory.
Yeah, U.S. banking stocks aren't officially in the bear market just yet, but they're getting close. I mean, even though they're up today, at this point they're down 17% from their peak. European banking stocks, as Melody alluded to, are doing a lot worse. They're down 27% from the peak, 23% from just a year ago. Unfortunately, we've got this global economic system that's largely dependent on the too big to fail banks, which we talked about 2 weeks ago. If they aren't healthy, nobody's generally going to be healthy for long, and it's starting to look and feel a lot like 10 years ago. But unlike then, we also have a global trade war that we're contending with. You know, the damage caused by this trade war, if it goes on a whole lot longer, you know, is going to make things progressively worse. Many companies have been trying to ride it out. We named one of them in the prior segment, Caterpillar. But eventually the money runs out and the layoffs begin, especially when you buy back all of your stocks with any cash that you happen to have lying around. Anyone who thought that this trade war wouldn't have serious consequences, well, I'm afraid we're going to have to think again. You know, according to some sources, tariffs paid by U.S. businesses are up 45% compared to a year ago.
Well, you know, it was, you know, China has stated they are not afraid of a long trade war. And, I mean, you know, we're entering a time when you have the economy is slowing, stocks are crashing. You have global banking woes are escalating. You know, it doesn't take much to spread fear and panic. And, you know, it's always interesting that, you know, I hear about the banking holidays and things are going to happen on Friday because over the weekend people can't. You know, with computers, it's not the same as it once was. where people would stand in lines outside the bank trying to get in. Even in 2008, there were lines around the block, people trying to get in, hoping they could get in there and get their money, or, you know, at least find out what's happening to their money. I think we've all forgotten about what happened in 2008 and the fear and the panic that was there because people couldn't get inside the bank that was closed. We hear reports from Italy. We hear reports from Greece that, you know, the banks were closed. They're only allowed to withdraw so much. But in today's world of computers, when you can transfer those digits, that's what they are, just digits, but you can, a lot of people think money's those digits are money, but still, you can clean out your bank account pretty quick. I don't know where you're going to move it to, but, you know, they could go into some... Where could you push that money quick? Just putting it in cash in a CD or an IRA you can open up and so forth and transfer those funds quickly. So banks have a little bit more to contend with this time than even what they did in 2008. So when you talk about, you know, this spreading like wildfire, you know, I think it's going to spread so fast, something we haven't never seen or experienced before. But, and there was one other article, Dave, I saw, and I wanted to bring to the listeners before we talk about gold going to the next leg up. And let me see if I can pull it up here, but it's about the central banks are looking to, and this is from Bloomberg, all right, and how central banks are setting to increase their purchases of gold in 2008. Well, they only got 3 months left, actually 2.5, for the first time in 5 years, as European and Asian countries seek to diversify their reserves. Net purchases of gold by central banks are forecast to rise to 450 metric tons this year, up from 375 tons in 2017. This was according to consultancy Metals Focus Ltd., and this is going to be the first increase since 2013, when banks have boosted their holdings by 646 tons, and that's the most for several decades. So with just over 2.5 months of the year left, it's more likely that the projection will be raised than lowered, because central banks generally seem interested in purchases. And this was according, again, to that senior analyst. So the central banks of Poland and Hungary have surprised the market by adding to their gold holdings for the first time in many years, whereas Hungary's tenfold increase of its gold reserves looks to be one off strategic purchase. Poland has made incremental additions for the last 3 months, suggesting the policy could continue. The biggest driver of the year's gain has been Russia. Now you know what they're doing with all their money. When they sold off their treasuries, they're buying gold. Whose central bank has added about 20 tons on average every month. Kazakhstan and Mongolia have also been among the buyers. So kind of interesting, ladies and gentlemen. So the central banks are buying, and if you're not, why not? That's the big question. So I think we'll find that in our newsletter next week, because I do think that is, you know, fairly important. So, and again, you know, you have these analysts are talking about gold could rise to 1500. Well, that's just the first leg up, because I believe you're going to see gold double that and go higher. We're talking about the short positioning, the CFTC short position in gold strength in the face of the higher U.S. dollar. Even $1,500 is not in the realm of possibilities. This is according to Think Markets chief market analyst Aslam, who sees the latest CFTC data as a positive sign for gold. Showed that the hedge funds have decided that it's about time for them to start scaling back from their short positions. This sends a strong bullish signal for the metal. And making things even more favorable for gold prices is the capitulation factor. in case the Fed changes its mind on how aggressive it wants to be when it comes to monetary policy tightening. So it's important to emphasize that back in 2015, when speculators had net long positions, it triggered a 30% move in gold price. A similar move would help the price to move to $1,500.
Well, yeah, and another sign that things are looking up for gold is its strength in the face of a higher U.S.
Yes.
dollar. You know, during the past few weeks, we've seen a positive correlation between the dollar index and the price of gold. This shows that gold has become somewhat immune to the rise in the dollar. You know, it simply means that, you know, we see any kind of pullback in the dollar index, the odds are much higher for a mammoth move in the gold price. On top of that, you know, recent weakness in global equities and, you know, particularly with bank and finance stocks around the world, especially in the emerging markets, and concerns around global economic growth have been helping gold. So, you know, the geopolitical environment is also finally lending a hand to turning the price of gold around. Investors looking toward risk-off assets with safe haven properties like gold. You know, in his report, Aslam happened to highlight, you know, these heightened geopolitical tensions between Saudi Arabia and the West over the killing of journalist Jamal Khashoggi, as well as Brexit negotiations and the Italian budget, as Melody mentioned last segment, and how that's going to affect things in the EU. So, you know, the emerging markets in particular are strike me as being you know, having a cause for optimism, you know, in particularly knowing that because of last year's tax cuts, corporate tax cuts, you know, the repatriation aspect of that, you know, we're generally going to see most of that repatriation in 2018. You know, and to the extent that, you know, the conversion of foreign currencies back into, you know, the dollar may have upward pressure on the dollar. There are two things. One, gold has been moving in correlation with this upward rise the last few weeks. And secondly, and more importantly, that repatriation is eventually going to go away, meaning that all the funds overseas will now be back here. And then, you know, put that with all the other issues we've just mentioned. Gosh, that's just a lot of upward pressure for gold. The demand is going to come back in a big way, and I think we're going to see a real big turnaround, Melody.
Absolutely, we are. The fundamentals for gold and strong. If you look at fundamentals for anything out there, gold and silver, it's a no-brainer. And as long as we have a fiat currency, gold is a no-brainer, because these problems aren't going to go away. They're only going to increase. They're going to be tried to be manipulated by the Federal Reserve and by governments. They bring us debts created, governments grow, and corruption strengthens. So, you know, there's no good signs when you have a fiat currency. And so gold, ladies and gentlemen, protects your purchasing power. I think this is really kind of fascinating, Dave, where China opened up the world's longest sea crossing.
Yeah, how about
and
it?
Talk that
about
is kind
an
of
infrastructure project.
Yeah. This is the world's longest sea crossing. It's 34.2-mile bridge and tunnel that have been almost a decade in the making for the first time, that connects the semi-autonomous cities of Hong Kong and Macau to the mainland Chinese city of Zhuhai by road. Zhuhai?
That sounds good enough.
Zhuhai. This bridge spans the mouth of the Pearl River and significantly cuts the commuting time between the three cities. Previously, it was a 4-hour drive. Now it takes 45 minutes. One section of the crossing dives underwater into a 4.2-mile tunnel that creates a channel above for large cargo ship containers to pass through. Now, this project came in over budget, no, with Hong Kong alone investing $15 billion in it, and it was delayed. It was originally supposed to open in 2016, so... you know, it's a pretty significant, you know,
project. You know, we don't see how many people it employed, but it does say that that the bridge is going to help Hong Kong and Macau, which is known as the, you know, the Las Vegas of that part of the world, you know, become more integrated with mainland China. But for some in Hong Kong, you know, which maintains a separate legal system from China, you know, the bridge is just the latest example of Beijing exerting more influence on Hong Kong, on the people there. You know, in September, a high-speed rail network connected the heart of Hong Kong directly to China's vast railway network. Hong Kong lawmaker Claudia Mo has given multiple interviews this year, likening the new bridge to a symbolic umbilical cord tethering Hong Kong to the motherland. And Beijing's plan to fully integrate Hong Kong and Macau into what Beijing is calling the Greater Bay Area, you know, a tech and innovation focused center to rival Silicon Valley, part of its undoubtedly part of its China 2025. Plan. You know, by 2030, Melody, authorities expect over 29,000 vehicles and 126,000 passenger trips to crisscross the bridge every day.
Yeah, but you know what? They're going to have all three jurisdictions are going to require passengers to clear immigration and customs. They're going to have strict quotas. That's going to be enforced for private cars. So, you know, here's something that's major with so many people yet, but they have strict. They're going to have strict quotas, you know, customs and everything. And here we
don't
can't
want too
even,
many capitalists we, crossing over into the mainland.
We can't. Yeah, but my point is, we can't even control our own borders. But yet here, you know, they're doing a very strict job. 800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. We'll be back tomorrow. Beth from CSC Talk Radio will be joining you tomorrow. So until then, be safe. Good night. God bless.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
And still there never seems to be a single penny left for me.
That's too bad.